of course, we're going over the five most potent, so we won't say most important, but the five most potent forms of devotional service. who can list those five? So, there's the five there, and I can just make that down for them. So, in these, for instance, now, I have to ask, who's read the chapter 13? Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Alright. What would the first quote that Rupa Goswami is discussing in his introduction into this chapter, what heading would you put there?
You want to
keep
your friend, you should not worship the deity, but appease.
What's that? Of these five, which one?
Worshipping
the deity, yeah. Describing there that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one becomes engaged in deity worship, Hare Krishna, and develops a desire to serve the deity, and by doing so, one forgets his material life and becomes transcendentally situated in devotional service. That's a very nice quote. To see the three mercies of Radha and Krishna is to forget such endeavours for material association. It says that Rupa Goswami composed his verse in such a way that he was seemingly praising the material association of friendship and love and was condemning the audience of Sri Murti or Govinda. This metaphorical analogy is constructed in such a way that things which seem to be praised are condemned and things which are condemned are praised. The actual import of the verse is that one must see the form of Govinda if one at all wants to forget the nonsense of material friendship of society. So Prabhupada describes there, of course, that deity worship important for everyone, but the Grihastha devotees should take a special interest in the deity worship, which means that they should look after the deities and the main temple that they happen to be associated with, and generally also they have some sort of an altar at home, which is becomes the central point of that for their activities. The Grihastha, and the same also actually in the seventh canto, in the fifth chapter, verses 23 to 24. There where Prahlada Maharaj describes the nine processes of devotional service, Shravan, Kirtan and Vishnu Smaran, and you see the very long purport there by Srila Prabhupada, and there where he discusses the worship at length. He makes a special mention there as well. The worship is particularly important, especially for the Grihastha. The second one, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, those couple of points there that by deity worship, one forgets material life and becomes transiently situated in devotional service. That's the main thing to pick up there. As far as hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a few important points that are worth listing, and you really want to go back to the last chapter. You see on page 104. Recite recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam among the devotees. So some of the main points that are listed there is that Srimad Bhagavatam is the desire tree. It is within the Vedas. The Vedas, of course, is a desire tree compared to a desire tree, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is like the ripened fruit of that desire tree. So that's a very important understanding. There are many, many Vedic literatures, and generally, especially if you speak to those within the Indian community who have had some association with the Vedas since childhood, they have not many of them reached from the Bhagavad Gita. A lot of them haven't even heard of Srimad Bhagavatam. But if you were to discuss with them the main reason, then you'd have to be able to systematically describe how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of the Vedas. It's a very important point. The Vedas themselves are like a desire tree. So that is an important point in itself. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam is like the right and true. Who would like to have a go at actually just expanding that? What does that actually mean? We say first, if we take the first point, there are two very important points to lock in. If we say the Vedas like a desire tree, why would we present that to someone who's discussing about the difference between us reading Srimad Bhagavatam and then reading other scriptures? Why would we bring up that point first?
They tell you how everything in the Adi, you can draw the rise and stuff like that.
In in what way?
Well, there's that the Vedic sections, talk about getting material.
Yeah, that's right. So you have people who want to fulfill material desires.
And there's also things like this human focus
you're on the right track there. You jumped a bit. So from there, what other type of desires?
Spiritual desires. Liberation.
Liberation. So what sort of
what
a jhana and
where
you've got jhana kanda sessions, dealing with transcendental knowledge. Upasana kanda. Which deals with worship, which ultimately leads to understanding that Vishnu is the supreme worshipful personality. And then someone you mentioned there's someone may be interested in Dharma or religious principles. Someone may be interested in economic development, Artha. Someone may be interested in Kama or enjoying the senses. And someone may be interested in Moksha or liberation. So the Vedas are like a desire tree because they can fulfill desires. So for instance, someone may be discussing with someone and they're saying that yes, I read this particular portion of the Vedas, and you can immediately identify which section that they're filling and point out to them that there are other sections for instance, if they're discussing on Dharma or what have you, then you can describe how there's a progression Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, through Karma, Jnana, and the Sun, Kama, like that. So, in that way, it's pointing out to people that there are as many desires there are to fulfill, that the Vedas. They're not just a narrow-minded body of works, but they're there, therefore all human beings to fulfill all aspects of life according to their level of desire and realization. So that's an important point. Some people may be approaching the desire tree of Vedic knowledge for some very gross base desires, and some may have much more lofty desires for the benefit of all humanity or for liberation, what have you. But for people to perceive that their section of the Vedas is one section within a big variety is very helpful, especially when you bring in the next point. So what was the next point? What's that? Why is that? What was the second point we mentioned before?
The right and truth.
The right and truth, yes. The best part of, it's the mature, relishable part, the best part, the fruit, the goal of the tree. What would we say about that? How do we substantiate that claim? What would we say?
Because the truth is
that's the content. That's a fact. It's describing effect of the Srimad Bhagavatam in one sense, which is one way of describing that it is right and true, and it's the highest goal. So, another way.
Well,
Well, the probably, you're gone.
Yeah, I was thinking that Srimad Bhagavatam basically, in short, gives you the explanation how this material was created, what is the purpose of our life, and what we should do to get ourselves out of this material entanglement and go back.
Well, I might say there are many explanations like that throughout the Vedas. Sutra means, it is a very concise statement which contains a vast amount of knowledge in a very concise statement, so therefore it can be difficult to comprehend, and it's also being a conclusion of all the Vedas. One needs some sort of a philosophical acumen in order to digest it and understand it. Vedanta, or the conclusion, or the end of knowledge. Vedanta means the end of knowledge. If we approach Vedic knowledge, the Vedic knowledge is so vast, and one can argue and discuss that knowledge unlimitedly, but one must come to an end of knowledge in order to have a solid platform of getting the final result. We can discuss Vedic knowledge for millions of lifetimes, but at some stage we've got to come to an end, to a conclusion, to a platform, that here is the end of that knowledge, here is the conclusion. That conclusion is the Vedanta, the end of knowledge, Vedanta Sutra, and then in the maturity of his self-realization, his last contribution to Vedic knowledge was the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So it is therefore the essence of the essence. So that's the just literally the timing of events Vyasadeva's writing, how he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam as his last contribution to writing Vedic knowledge as the commentary on the conclusion of the Vedas. So it substantiates that it is the right and true. And it is discussing, it is taking all other Vedic knowledge, all of it put together, and describing it, the cream of all that, the essence. Other Vedic books do not have that status. In the same way that an author, may have written 3 or 4 books, at the end of writing 3 or 4 books or 50 books or what have you, he writes one final book which is a summary of the essence of what he was trying to say. So that becomes the cream of all that knowledge.
Srimad Bhagavatam, it doesn't
As Rupa Goswami points out in here in this chapter, he says that there I was on page 104 of the Nectar Devotion, and we were citing in the previous chapter, chapter 12, a couple of points about the position of Srimad Bhagavatam's ladies. Now, if we so to answer your question, just before we go there, a couple of other points were raised. One is it should be heard methods of hearing. So we a couple of important points about the position of Srimad Bhagavatam, which you should note. The methods of hearing also begin in that chapter, which is it should be heard from the self-realized soul, which is likened to being touched by the beak of a parrot. The nectar can actually flow forth when heard from the self-realized soul, just as the nectar of the fruit tends to flow forth more and more tasty when touched by the beak of a parrot. It must be heard in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. That's also discussed here. And if we actually then skip to chapter 13 in answer to your question, the final point there to take is that in order to relish Srimad Bhagavatam, one must actually be free from desire for karma, jnana, moksha. So the answer to that question is that Srimad Bhagavatam begins where the path of karma, jnana and moksha ends. One who has matured in their realization, their understanding of their own, you know, spiritual nature and the nature of the material world, strong desire to develop a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord, they can relish Srimad Bhagavatam. Others who are not on that elevated platform, who are still endeavouring for lower stages of perfection, will find it difficult to understand the relevance of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam literally is decrying those paths as not very restful, not very significant. Their position is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, but their position is stated as being dry. It does discuss not in a very flattering way. Because, the one sees them for what they are. Srimad Bhagavatam will discuss, attempts at karma kandana by pointing out exactly the foolishness of, you're asking for some limited result, which is going to give some, limited happiness, very, very limited, when the Vedas are compared to a desire tree. So again, it's like, if the Vedas are a desire tree and they can offer you unlimited happiness, and you approach them, for some petty material desire that takes a lot of endeavour to get a little result. So, they are the same with Yanakanda and, Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha are discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam, but pointing out really they're not very significant and they're not very enjoyable. Better off to just forget about it and take the devotional service, which actually automatically gives you the results of all those without endeavouring for it. So that's the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. You take the bhakti, you're not separately endeavouring for Dharma, Karma, Moksha, and yet you're getting the results of those anyway. That's also described. I think that's actually described a little bit in the next chapter, which we may get into. So it is discussed, but in its proper perspective. Whereas, you know, the persons who don't have a taste for Srimad Bhagavatam and are actually going to perhaps become a conversation of the Vedas, you know, they're very attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, as it said, that, you know, you can, you know, you perform this particular ceremony in Jagya and you go to the moon planet and there's, you know, so many wonderful things there. So, you know, there's some flowery words attracting like that. Whereas, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't. It just says, don't bother. So it's discussed, but Srimad Bhagavatam is aiming at those who have mature intelligence. And you know, for those whose intelligence is very immature, you know, comparatively to those who read Srimad Bhagavatam, just like, you know, what we might say to a child to attract them to do something, you know, to clean their teeth at night, what have you. You know, for an adult, we just say, you don't clean your teeth, your teeth. You know, for a child, it's like, here comes the, you know, the magic wand, and, you know, oh, there's some fairy dust in there, that toothbrush, and, you know. You know, so you see the difference. And for an adult, you cut to the chase. You know, clean your teeth will fall out. It has some value. You know, therefore, for the very first verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, say that all forms of cheating religion are kicked out. Ultimately, you know, apart from bhakti, you know, there are various degrees of the conditioned soul wanting to be cheated and taking up you know, a path that is allows them to be cheated to some degree, to remain in some sort of illusion that they're conditioned to, attached to. And at the same time, it also allows them to make some progress, some purification beyond that illusion, bit by bit. But for those who are finished with all cheating, all illusion, like that, and Srimad Bhagavatam is presented. So, you know, there's some important points there. Note those down. Make a little list of those, it's quite important. Associating with advanced devotees. Again, in chapter 12, there are a few items, a few important points. And it's good to be able to, you know, takes a little practice, but you should practice doing this, that you know, the book these days, they have they're a little easier to go through. I was looking at the first Nectar Devotion. I actually read the Nectar Devotion before I'd ever met a devotee, and read the Bhagavad Gita, the next girlfriend had in her place, and after reading the Bhagavad Gita, I wanted to read another book by Prabhupada, and I remembered that my brother had this little pink page of that book, and I'd once asked him about it. I said, "What's that book?" He said, "Oh, it's about yoga or something, you wouldn't be interested." And he put it in the box and put it under his bed. Anyway, after I read the Bhagavad Gita, that book just came into my head, because I was thinking, oh, I think I can read another book, I told her. And it's just that book came into my head. And I'm wondering if that book that my brother showed me, and it must have been a year or 2 years, if that had anything to do with Kalpa. Because I've never looked at it, I just always saw the pink Kalpa at the end. Never even had a touch it. So I went back to his room and searched everywhere, couldn't find it, had a look under his bed, found the box, and there's a nectar devotion, and turned it over to the picture of Kalpa on the back. Yes. So I actually took that nectar devotion. I packed up, I got some water, some muesli, and a tent. And I went and camped in the forest for about 2 weeks, and I just read the nectar devotion. And up on the seat, and I just read it. I mean, looking back, I can't, I couldn't have understood much, but you do pick up things, you should associate with devotees. There's something you pick up. But I was looking at that book the other day. It didn't have these little captions at the top, where, like, it says associating with advanced devotees, and there's a couple of paragraphs, and then chanting the holy name, and then, those headings weren't there. So obviously that re-edited. That's what just reminded me of those who didn't know about that. But the point being that when you read, say if we look at 106, associating with advanced devotees, there's two paragraphs there. It's a very good practice to, after reading it, try and just put what you read into one or two points. 1 point, 2 points. It's a very good practice. Who finds it, when they read something, 10 minutes later, they can't remember anything they've done? Yeah. That's how you stop that. If you do that, if you read it, and then immediately after you read it, you put it into 1 point even, or 2 points, that summed it up, you'll find the whole thing will just come back in your head. If you read a few verses and you might have 4 or 5 points, you'll find that literally half a paragraph and someone will talk to you and those points will be there, and you'll be able to remember, you'll be able to quote the verses and so many things, all kinds of things. It's a very, very good way to remember shastra. And practice, because also, it's for the exam, which of course comes up in London, for the nectar devotion. It's a good way to study for it. It makes it very easy. So, under associating with advanced devotees, we can break that down into a couple of points there, that nothing compares to the association of devotees, is one point. It is compared to a crystal stone, that's another. So there's a comparison. Analogies. And then we go to our current chapter. It describes it as compared to a man and woman's fruitful combination. I described that there in the VTU book. Prabhupada gives he quite often cites that example that, you know, when a man is potent and the woman is fertile, then there will be a child, you know, a child will be born. It's a potent combination. And hearing Srimad Bhagavatam associated with advanced devotees is like that. If the devotee you're hearing from is an advanced devotee and the person hearing is very eager and very attentive, then it produces a very, very powerful result. If either of those are not there, the result is so sort of Prabhupada touches upon it, but that's the example that he's actually touching upon. Any questions? Chanting the holy name of the Lord again. Previous chapter. We've got there on page 106 that there's one who chants spontaneously, then that means that they attain the highest perfection. But that's a very important point. There's another quote there that means chanting means having the Lord's constant association. So that sort of backs up the first point. How can chanting, how can spontaneously chanting the holy name of the Lord be ascertained as the highest perfection? Because one is always associating with the Lord and has that spontaneous attraction to the Lord's association. What could be more, what level of spiritual advancement is there above associating with the Lord? Something beyond that. One is spontaneously, there's no hesitation, and obviously then the stage of perfection. The next point, the next quote, how is it that we're associated with the Lord? Because he's not different from his name. That's described in the next quote. Cleanse the heart, and that service attitude leads to a very pure form of chanting, the best of chanting, which is very powerful and cleansing the heart. So most of that is found in that chapter. As you can see, it appears when you read those quotes that you've got three or four nice quotes that appear to be unrelated, but literally one after another, each one is substantiating a very important point that one should understand about chanting. So there's four points there. Really essential to understand why it is so valuable, why it is so potent. And chapter 13, we see that some of the evidences which are offered. Who's got their student purple? Okay, so you're answering the questions as I gather, very good. I know you've got them all done. But all these points, they're right there. You know, this is a really. Did you read that? No? Really? What's that?
Movement.
Movement, yeah. Because as you can see, it's the essence. You know, in some cases you could almost read that and not the chapter, and you'd have a better understanding of what was going on. It is so important. You know, pass that around and just have a look. All these points that I'm making, of course, are from that book, each and every one. Again, just a little study tip. What I would tend to do is to read that first, so one page, and then read the chapter. For instance, as you read it, you see that there might be the odd word missed out. So, for instance, in worshipping the deity, it says, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one becomes engaged in devotional service and develops a desire to something. By doing so, one forgets his material life and becomes transiently situated in devotional service. So, two points are made. One is that one develops a certain desire, and the other is that one forgets material life and becomes transiently situated. So, even with those that word missing, you still really pick up the essence of that. But you'll find that, you know, for instance, in item 3, association with advanced devotees, where it's just list everything you need to know. There's no words missing. It just gives you the 3 points that associating with devotees, there's nothing compared to such association. It's compared to a crystal stone, and it's compared to a man and woman's fruitful combination. It's not asking to find anything. And quite often I've noticed that in a lot of these, they don't ask you to find very much at all, and they actually just list most of the points anyway. These questions in the student notebook, again, they're not just random questions, they actually sum up every essential point in the chapter. Nothing in this. They're almost like a summary of the chapter, point by point, in logical order. So, find it very useful to read that, even with the words missing, and you get a very good idea of the chapter. And then read the chapter, you'll find the words will fill in, yeah. And then go back and look at those main points again, and that's a very easy way to read the chapter. So, has everyone got one of those books? Is it a time factor, or you didn't quite realise the value?
The ability was in protection.
What's that?
The ability was in
protection. Alright. Well. Okay. I'll see you in the next one. That's one of the things I mustn't be doing my job, because it says here that, you know, on page 110, down above, Rupa Goswami says that the transcendental nature of relishing topics which concern Krishna, he says, the devotee once said, "It is very astonishing that since I have seen this personality of Godhead, who is washed by the tears of my eyes, there is shivering of my body, and he has made me a failure in executing my material duties. Since seeing him, I cannot remain silently at home. I wish to go out to him always." The purport of this statement is that as soon as one is fortunate enough to contact a pure devotee, one must be anxious immediately to hear about Krishna, to learn about Krishna, or in other words, to become fully Krishna conscious. So that must be the shortcoming of one of your teachers, namely me, that somehow or another I'm not invoking that strong desire that you go home after class and you think, I have no interest in anything here in this home. It's all like a barren desert to me now. I don't even want to look at the face of my husband. My children. When we get to that point, we're making progress. No, devotees don't artificially renounce those things which have relationship with Krishna. But still, there is certainly one of the things which does mark the progression of one's devotional progress is that burning desire to always somehow just get a little bit more of that nectar of Krishna consciousness. You read a page you read a page of the Nectar Devotion and you think, go shopping, and then while you're in the aisles and you're shopping, you're thinking, I can't wait to get home. I just want to read one more page. So I just want to. And you're serving your children's breakfast, and you're thinking about some verse, beautiful verse that Rupa Goswami, pouring the milk on their heads. We'll keep working on it. What's that?
Contents.
Of course, sometimes, because if we read something and it's difficult to digest, it can put us off reading. If we're reading something and we're not quite getting all the nectar out of it, then certainly we don't have the taste. But that's why, if by reading these pages and then reading the chapter, you'll actually increase so much more what you get out of your reading, and that will increase your taste. And that taste will naturally just grows and grows like that. Residing in Ventura, he has again from page 108 that the goal of life, a transcendental loving attitude towards the Supreme Lord, can easily be achieved by simply living in Ventura for just a few moments. So, that was the potency of Ventura. Just residing there for a few moments, one can develop that desire, loving attitude. And the second point is that even non-devotees can perceive the beauty, the transcendental beauty of Ventura. And anyone who goes there will never want to return to the material world. So in chapter 13, a lot of evidences are actually given in the form of Rupa Goswami's own verses, which he has composed. They're listed. There's Shraddha Purvaka Srimurti Seva, or serving Srimurti with faith. That's the one that my dear friend, if you still have desire to enjoy the company of your friends, don't look upon that form of Krishna. So that's describing Srimurti. There is one, Rishikai Saha Shi Bhagavatara Das Vadaha, tasting the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of Rishika Vaishnavas. What are Rishika Vaishnavas? Very eager to relish the rasa and the nectar of the Krishna consciousness. And they're very eager and they're very expert. When my spiritual master was here in New Jersey, they served up apple dumplings. And I was serving the devotees, so person. So I put this large apple dumpling on the plate, and of course the sauce that went with it. I was thinking, I'm not sure how much he wants to eat, so I just sort of hesitated, but he said, the secret is to get that juice in the pour or on the top, And he sort of likened that to being a devotee. Enjoying mentality, but it's actually very important. It's there to be tasted, and we should relish that. So you get the apple dumpling, you get the sauce. It just makes it perfect like that. So if we're reading Nectar Devotion, chanting our rounds, and somehow we don't have quite a strong taste, an overwhelming taste, we've forgot to put that sauce on top. We're not becoming expert enough in seeing the rasa, the nectar that's there. And as devotees, before death comes, we've got to become expert like that. Because it would be become an expert like that, you guarantee you'll go back to God. But if we haven't learned that, we may be still be into another round of birth and death in the two worlds. So before our next death comes, we have to become expert to seek the devotees, to find that rasa when we're reading. The nectar is there. Rupa Goswami is saying, millions of ears and millions of tongues, even that wouldn't be sufficient. There is so much nectar there, and we're thinking, I can't, I just can't quite get much juice. So we have to become very expert, we have to practice. And that's what, so that, as we described previously, there are different quotes about associating with devotees. or hearing. Item 23 was to hear, and it described hearing about Krishna's name, his form, his pastimes, etc. Item 34, I think this is in the list of 44 other. So, and item 34 was to hear revealed Shastra, and that was in the mood of serving Shastra, to worship the Shastra and serve it. This one here is also hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's specifically, the difference is to relish it, Krishna consciousness, by hearing it from Rusika devotees or self. That's the import of it. We have to associate the devotees who have a real taste and a real expertise at just finding that relishable rasa within chanting, within service, within studying Srimad Bhagavatam, and learn what do they see. I always admire certain devotees that I particularly admire who have that ability. Kesava is one of them. Kesava always knows, and he seems to be a devotee who always knows where the nectar is. Very hard working, not in a sahaja way, just someone who's just very expert at making the whole Krishna consciousness movement just so relishable and enjoyable that he can just see he'll be fixed up for life because he's got nectar here, he's got nectar there, everywhere he looks he's got nectar. And that's what we want to be as devotees, just we're just like just drowning in this nectar. And to associate with devotees, citation, what have you, how do they do it? Our future as devotees is very solid. And of course, that was the lesson that my spiritual master gave me as well with the dumpling. Don't forget the rasa. So that's an important point. That's the part of hearing from self-realized soul, and that's why it particularly likens hearing from a self-realized soul to the pecking of a parrot's beak, because it releases the rasa, it releases the juice, it releases the taste. It's not just that, they're always thinking about they're always moaning to the spirit soul and they're never on the positive platform. It's not just some dry analytical knowledge that they're fixed up in and never deviate from. It's the fact that they're actually the seeker devotees. I think the seeker devotees from is described somewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's one of his names has the word seeker in it. Therefore, coming to the last point that, these items, they're factual, although they, true to certain devotees and not for all. And the other point, of course, is that, these five items are described as very, very potent, but they still have to be done properly. So, for instance, if we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, very, very patient. But it still has to be done properly in order to release that potency. Associating hearing from our Bhagavatam, from the lotus, very, very powerful. Meaning that even one is a complete neophyte, but you hear the pastimes of Krishna and any of the verses, the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, anything related to Krishna from a receipt of the devotee, and you just you feel in ecstasy that the hairs on the back of your neck stand on end, and you get these ecstatic symptoms which come out of nowhere sometimes, but symptoms that you really shouldn't be experiencing because you're not on any sort of level that's very, very powerful. Devotees of the Lord are extremely powerful, and the holy name is powerful. So he started chanting Krishna, Krishna, Jai Prabhupada, Jai, and I'm thinking, the cameras are here, they'll come and beat us all up like that. And even though he was, I was still thinking, oh my God, there's wild people out there. And then because he was doing that, it's like hundreds of people started gathering around. They all started, Harry Ball, and then there was like thousands of them. I was thinking, these commies are outnumbered. They got, they're like insignificant. I was just thinking, and then just all fear went away because I was thinking, these devotees are just so powerful individually. And you get someone like your spiritual master, and then, all the associates and what have you, it's just like just drowns everything else. These, it came to mind, because these processes are very, very powerful in themselves, and they have that effect of, producing ecstasy, even in a neophyte. That they just propel one forward, in devotional service. But don't think that's an exaggeration, that you've just got to do it properly, that's all. Understand, when it says associate with devotees and hear from above the tongue with them, it means find some of the secret devotees who are very expert in relishing the nectar of Krishna and hear it from them, and then you'll see that ecstasy and that relish. So, any questions or comments?
When you're talking about the someone that has credit getting messed up, that as in exchanges with Krishna, that they swear to get in their service?
Yes, is there any evidence? So I thought the rest of it was all suffering in the material world. There's the nature of Krishna consciousness, and then there's suffering in the material world. I'm not sure whether the next is not very referring to. It is. Feeling the presence of Krishna, which becomes very, very powerful in the association of devotees who have become very expert in invoking the presence of Krishna. Alright, so we didn't get into the next chapter, but the last point was that Rupa Goswami brings this into the next chapter. We won't take it up here, but just to mention it, that some scholars argue that simply by following the principles of Varna and Ashram, one can gradually rise to the perfections reached by practicing devotional service. But this argument is not accepted by the great authority. So we'll take that up a lot more in the next chapter. All right, thank you very much. And so please read chapter 14. Try and read a couple of the chapters, 14, 15, because at some stage, I'm not sure which one, but we may have to double up in a lesson to do two chapters to keep up with that. So that we get plenty of time for revision and to go over the test and, give ourselves